You are listening to the Dissident Science Podcast, where critical thinking meets mainstream theory head on. All right, folks. This is David D. Hilster again, and we've got a very special guest today, somebody I work with a bunch of months. I've known him for a very long time, and we worked together on the documentary film Einstein Wrong, The Miracle Year, and he's a composer, a songwriter, a singer, a musician, a good friend, and not too bad of a second concerto player when his hands aren't like all getting bashed up. But Michael Ruggieri from Long Beach, California, originally from Rochester, New York. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me on the program today.
Yeah, I can't believe you would come on to such a, you know, scientific dissident crackpot type of podcast. What are you doing? You're going to ruin your reputation.
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a daunting, definitely a daunting experience. But, you know, I made it through the film. So, you know, we can definitely work on this here.
Well, you know, you just want to be associated with me. I don't know if there's, I did have actually a lot of composers interested because they're always interested, but it's not always the case that they understand or get into what the science is about. And of course, the being a controversial subject, sometimes people don't want to be associated with it. But luckily, you know, you took up the a cause, and we started working together, and it worked out way beyond what I thought. It worked out pretty well. So today we're going to talk about pretty much three areas. The movie itself, scoring for a film, in this case a dissident film about Einstein being wrong. The second part we're going to talk about actually the film industry. And we've sent this film out to over 80 festivals. And I thought talking with you, Michael, would be interesting since you're an artist. And in this case, even though I'm a scientist, I'm also an artist. You know, what do we think happened? Why has it been rejected? It's gotten close to being accepted. And then finally, just talk about the dissident science and see, you know, what a kind of a layperson is who's been exposed to a little bit thinks about this. I think people are fearful always to be associated with this group of scientists for being you know, crackpot-ish and all that. But let's start with the movie itself. I mean, tell the audience how you got involved with this project.
Well, I think, you know, as you said, we go pretty far back. You know, our families, you know, of course, are all, you know, grew up together, very good friends. And I think, you know, just being around the inception, you know, from the inception of the film, when you really, you know, brought it from, you know, conception into the very initial planning stages and, you know, really until you brought it into where, you know, full production kind of started on it. You know, I've sort of always been there, you know, in the background and have had, you know, been a privy to really, you know, learning quite a bit about exactly what was going on. Your point of view. So, you know, I was sort of there on that part of things in the initial stages. And then as we progressed and as you, you know, got to that point where you, you know, you were really looking for songwriters and to put together, you know, the score, to put together maybe a piece for the film, we had already had one of my songs from an earlier CD you used for an initial sort of trailer in the beginning. So,
oh, that's right.
We had that groundwork laid out already.
That's right. I forgot.
I think I got a. I may have earned a penny off that. We had a great.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I mean, we had to make it sort of official. You couldn't just totally rob it. But yeah, it was 7 days and seven nights, wasn't it, or something like that? Or
7 days. Yeah, 7 days.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to dig that one up. But yeah, keep going. I'm sorry. I just forgot about that.
So that was, I think at that point, you know, we might have always known that maybe it's, I would have been involved possibly as a consultant at that point, you know, on music you were bringing into the film. I know you also had a very good idea for really what you wanted, and especially once it got progressed, you had, you know, pieces in place for the feel. So the fact that you had a very good understanding of what you wanted really made it easier, especially this being my first, you know, venture into film. So my initial tasks were not as difficult as I had thought they would be. And being involved with film, I think being that lay person and working with dissident scientists, I think I was just really excited about it. I didn't have that preconceived notion about the mainstream science. So I really wasn't too concerned about that. It was really just exciting.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. I mean, you also know me, and I think that's part of what we'll talk about later in the third part of the film is, you know, the dissident side. I mean, having to know a person, you realize Dave's not off his rocker. I mean, it can't be that's what I would imagine. But yeah, I forgot all about that, the seven days, seven nights, but now it's coming back in my head. but that's pretty good. And I think the other thing too was interesting is that my editors, when they put stuff together for a really, really rough cut, they threw music into it. And that was really enlightening because I myself wasn't really sure. And at that point, when you hire good editors, which I did, they came in and they had notions. They don't have, like you said, they don't have preconceived notions. They look at what's going on and see what would fit. And a lot of the inspiration I had was listening to their cuts, and they just grabbed music and put it on there. It doesn't matter if it was copyrighted at that point. It's just a matter of putting something in to get a feel for it. And my one editor, Andrea Tucker, she told me, she works a lot on TV. She told me, Dave, go out there, try Jingle Punks. And so I got Jingle Punks, which is a real weird name for a site, but it had all kinds of clip, you know, little snippets of music that I could just throw in there. So I started doing that, and I started sort of getting the idea of what was working. And believe it or not, it's sort of funny. What seemed to work was when I typed in, because Jingle Punks and all of these online music stores where you can buy these little clips, and basically they exist because you got TV shows and they don't want to pay composers. It's too time consuming, too expensive, which really sucks for composers. But so they'll just subscribe to this and they'll just throw it in. And it's funny because I've heard on CNN some of the clips that I was using in the beginning from my film. I'm going, I know that clip. And so people pay it. So you make these little, you know, little sound bites or music bites, and people, you know, go and get them and throw them in, and they pay a little bit of royalty on them. And so that really got me going. And like I said, what was working is in these websites, you can type in almost anything. And I found out from the people who make these websites, they will index the heck out of these things. They will put everything they can possibly think of, because you can put in, give me music like so-and-so and like, you know, John Lennon, and it'll go get all the sound clips that they think is in that kind of style. So they will index it by names, by styles, by famous people, by anything they can think of, and they keep just adding to it, because it gives a person the ability not to go in and choose music by just listening to it, but I want this feel, I want this kind of genre. And the thing that got me, worked best for me, was the word, I don't know if I've told you this, quirky.
Yeah.
So what I found,
that word.
Oh yeah, probably. But that was what I was typing in, and I was getting all these things back that I really liked. And so that was sort of, you know, how I started. And then once I got all those sort of clips in, I was doing that without a composer. I think, you know, we finally got to the point where I started talking with you about it, and I was serious. And I think if I remember, it was like, wait a minute, I am talking to a composer. I don't remember, just because you do so many things. Do you remember that moment we were sitting there? I think it was in your house in the back there. And I actually said, well, let's give this a try.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I would probably have to say that some of the credit, you know, what we may have to give to the missuses. You know, we had, as I said, you know, you and I had many conversations about music and possibly what things you were doing, but it was kind of at that point, I think, where they might have at one point sort of, you know, my wife came and said, I think Dave wants you to put something together for the film. And I said, oh yeah, you know, we've been talking about it a little bit, but maybe just on a consulting. She said, no, I think it's a film. And then I think, you know, Doris might've spoken with you a little bit. And then you and I got together out back at my place. And that's exactly what happened. You had said, why don't you put together, you know, a piece for the film? And I was like, yeah, let's, you know, let's give it a try. And, you know, at that point, you know, I'd always really wanted to compose something for a film. I even, you know, had scoring kind of in the back of my head. However, at that point, it was sort of just, well, let's put together a piece, maybe for the title track or just a piece to include, and then we'll go from there. And it was really right around that time where the idea for the song, the initial idea, you know, kind of came, you know, to fruition. And I recall, we go back to that word quirky, because that was definitely one of the words you said, you know, something quirky, something, you know, upbeat, you know, that innocence, you know, bright day, you know, very positive feeling. And that idea that I had just, you know, I really, you know, was going back and forth for a couple weeks after that. And I kept coming to that idea and saying, you know, it just had that feel. So that was sort of where that happened. And really from there, it just kind of came together. So it was very exciting putting that initial piece together. You know, and I can recall, you know, the words, you know, sitting down and, at that point, once I had all the music done, it was going for sort of the, it was sort of a that quirky feel with a kind of a 40, a little bit of a 40s theme. I wanted to get some brass in there, maybe even a little bit of a carnival-esque, you know, because of the Einstein thing. And then just sort of like a today feel and that bright, airy feel.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think we're going to be stopping here, taking a break. And in this break, we're going to listen to the theme song that you came up with. And I do, I think now when I think back on it, I think what was happening at that wasn't so much, I think Mike, our wives, I think it was, my memory always gets jarred, but I think what was happening was I was thinking, I was talking to you, and it was using you in my head as somebody that was, you know, I knew was composer. And then after something hit me, I think before we had met there, that's saying, wait, and I believe I talked with Doris about it. And I said, I think I'm going to sit down with Michael and give him a try. What do you think? You know, you think he could do it? Now I remember, I think that's where that came from. I think that's why your wife came up to you and said, hey, I think Dave wants to talk to you about something. Because I think I ran it by Doris and I ran it by Valeria because I didn't want to put pressure on you, you know, and that's not something you wanted to do and didn't want to scare you away. So let's take a look. Let's take a listen to what's the official title of the theme song?
The official title is The Miracle Year.
Okay, so let's listen to The Miracle Year. It's about 2 minutes and something. We'll listen to the whole thing, and we'll be right back.
Celebrate a life so grand. Hey, mystery, that fairy tale.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. That's a great song. I was blown away by it in so many ways. And of course, the theme song that you came up with, I could never have imagined in my wildest dreams the way it went, especially with the Barker in there. I just thought that was just hilarious. But I think one of the most amazing things about that, there are two amazing things about that, the theme song for the music. I mean, well, three maybe. One is documentary science film don't have theme songs. They just don't have them. And that to me is just marvelous. The second thing is that how this fit into a video that I shot in 2007 just to get my chops. I think it was before that. I think it was 2006 or 2005 even, to get my chops with the new camera at the time, which wasn't even high def. It was a pretty expensive camera. And how I dropped it into this video I shot of the kidnapping of Stephen Hawking. And it just, with almost no tweaks at all, everything fit into it. It just blew me away. And the third thing that blew me away was and that's what I want to talk about, because we've talked a little bit already about the quirkiness, and you gave us some ideas of the style, the 40s, open, airy, positive, which I wanted for the film. But you did something that blew my mind, which was you came up and put into the lyrics a quote from Einstein. I'm not even sure you knew it was from Einstein, but maybe you did. The facts, if the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts. And the lyrics itself, I'd like to talk about, because we haven't talked about those. I get the bright side and, you know, life and that stuff. But where did that come from? I mean, you hit on, in fact, in the movie, where I put that quote in the movie, which comes to screen by Albert Einstein, which is quite shocking for people to hear that, you know, hey, it changed the facts. Mm-hmm. I actually time it in the film with the music. So the music's in right. The background. And as the words come on the screen, Kayla is singing those words. So why don't you tell me, how did you get that into the film? Where did that come from?
Well, as I was really, you know, researching then, you know, once the music was complete, I was really researching for the lyrics. You know, I really got into, you know, I was researching different quotes from Einstein and some of his different, you know, thoughts on different subjects, you know, whether it be love or nature or things like that. And so I, you know, some of these quotes just, you know, they just fit. It just, you know, and that was one of them where, you know, when the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts again. It just flowed with that part of the song. I was, you know, pretty sure that, you know, once you saw it, you know, you're going to be excited about it. But that was kind of how that came about. I really wanted to infuse in the lyrics, you know, bits and pieces to go along with it. And kind of the subject matter of the song was with that innocent, inquisitive, childish, you know, sort of questioning of an authority figure.
Right.
And I think having Kayla, you know, sing it, Kayla Christina was the vocalist on it. And, you know, at first it was sort of just as a trial, but her voice just fitted perfectly with, you know, sort of
it
that
did.
Innocence.
It really
worked with that inquisitive, you know, asking,
right.
You know, in this case, Einstein, you know, hey, mister, can you tell me does space bend, and those different questions in there that sort of fit the whole feel of it.
Yeah, no, it's quite amazing. I mean, like I said, it's one of the most more remarkable parts of the entire project. And also, Kayla, it's interesting that when you first played the song to me, which was a big moment, I knew right away it was Kayla. And it was funny because I wasn't convinced. The first thought is, okay, well, we'll have to get another singer. And it wasn't because I really listened to it and said, okay, I've now ruled her out. But what happened with me is I kept listening to it, and I kept listening to it, and I kept listening to it. And it grew on me more and more. The innocence of her voice, it just happened. And then it got to the point where I got to the second problem. I said, oh my gosh, is she going to be able to handle being, you know, the voice on this? And then I got into another conundrum. Well, I've been listening to it. And I actually sat down with her very shortly afterwards by myself. Yeah. I went alone in her bedroom, door open, of course. And then, you know, you I sat with her and I said, look, you really have a quality of voice that's really natural. I said, I'm a person who sang in the Sambadrome. You may be the only gringo to do so, but I don't have a quality of voice. It was all hard work, you know. I said, you really, and I started to talk to her about her, you know, where do you do this? Why is this coming out? Where did this come from? You know, and I wanted to talk to her away from you and Valeria because I wanted her to get a completely outside opinion, just like forget about all the emotions with mom and dad and all that kind of stuff in the sense of, you know, who's raising you, who's there with you every day. Let me talk to you as a professional. And, you know, I really talked to her in a very positive way. And she, you know, it turns out great. In fact, the other song that that was put into the film by my editors was, was it The Way I Am, or what's the title of that?
Right, The Way I Am.
Yeah, by Ingrid Michaelson.
Ingrid Michaelson.
And that just fit absolutely perfect with the scene with the birth of my daughter. And you redid it, and she sang that. And it was just absolutely beautiful. She just really has a great quality of voice. So it's wonderful, you know, to have... to be involved with friends and doing such a great, you know, such great work, and to put this together. Now, what we're going to have in the podcast, I'm going to put in the music video for you and some links to Kayla's work and some of the stuff, so you'll be able to hear that. But let's talk about some of the moods in the film that today we're going to move this a little bit. We're going to talk about the film acceptance and dissonance in the third part. Let's concentrate still on the composing. Obviously, there were parts in the film that we had that were different moods. We had, you know, the quirky scientists. We had scientists at a conference, which you sort of gave it. I said I wanted to sort of like, you know, pump, dun, 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 you know, that kind of thing. We had emotional parts of it where Doris cries when she's, you know, worried that my dad isn't going to like the idea that the baby she's carrying is a female because my dad was wanting a boy for a grandson. And then the scene that, you know, I'm in where I'm talking about, you know, what this means to me, this whole endeavor. And so you had a range of emotions. You had the quirky side. You had a deep emotional side. Tell us a little bit about how you approached that as a composer, all these different types of emotions.
Yeah, there was and initially once we got past the theme song, we were going to move forward then with the soundtrack of the film and the composing of that. It was you know looking at those pieces, and it was like, okay, we really cover a wide gamut of moods and feels in this film. And that first was a little daunting. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to reach, you know, really into that quirkiness, into that fun, into emotions. You know, there's a lot of emotional scenes in there, so it was very exciting on that. And I have to say, one of my favorite pieces is that piece that I put in for with the birth, when you first found out the sex of your child. And that was just really specifically for that piece. I put that together, so it worked great. And the other part was, you know, when we had our communications and you really sort of broke down as we were moving forward, you know, just kind of send me pieces as you do them. And, you know, so nightly I would just sort of write, you know, whatever the mood kind of struck, let me go into this genre. And then I would just, you know, do about either a minute or 2 minute clip of it and, you know, send it your way. And, you know, that's how that sort of went. So it was really, you know, just that excitement of knowing that we were going to be reaching into all different genres in the film. Kept it very exciting, and it really worked out well. And I think your placement of these pieces was perfect.
Yeah, I think it was a great collaboration. I mean, today and age, the way the internet works and all the digital stuff, and I can edit the entire film on a Mac Mini, you know, in high def, even if it wasn't even shot in high def, do graphics, drop in these sound bites. So I get them. And it was funny because they didn't go everywhere. You couldn't just put them anywhere. And, you know, I would try different ones out. And I think the only one that I was really missing were the more emotional sides, that you were cranking out stuff. And I mean, I was putting it here and putting it there. And I try to be... literally minutes, and I'd have it sitting in the place. I said, this is perfect. And I think that was the only real area that I felt that you got to write some stuff for this. And so, so it really turned out, I think, just superb. And it was a wonderful time. I had just such a great time. I'm really looking to do another one, even though I've sent it to lots of film festivals. I mean, everyone, the biggest ones, and it wasn't accepted. In fact, I know it made the finals in a couple of them and just didn't make it. And we're going to talk about that. And this third part now, we're going to talk about what possibly is going on with these film festivals. Obviously, the film has intrigue. We screened it with a bunch of laymen, and it was just overwhelmingly, they loved it. It wasn't like super rave reviews. Oh my gosh. But for the subject, they were all very surprised. It was handled it's for the average person dealing with a very hard subject. It's got a human story and drama in it, but it also exposes Einstein. Hey, he's wrong, and here's where it is. And that was the whole idea. This film was right. Supposed to break open. So let's take a break here, and we'll get back, and let's talk about that. The film festival circuit, what I like to call social dissidents. I did my first podcast on that. And then the scientists themselves, what do you think as a person standing outside, as a lay person? So we'll be right back with Dissident Science. Interested in discussing science like you hear on the Dissident Science podcast with others in your area? Then think about starting a local natural philosophies meetup at meetup.com. And to make things easy, the Chappelle Natural Philosophy Society can provide slideshows, scientist interviews, and even screenings of dissident films to get your group going and discussing the latest the best scientific minds on the planet have to offer. Simply go to community.naturalphilosophy.org, click on Meetup, and you'll be on your way to find out how to start your local group. You can even generate your Meetup banner online instantly on their website. So get back to stimulating scientific discussion about real science with like minds, and you will soon find that science is fun again. All right, we're back. This is David D. Hilser with Dissident Science, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're talking today with Michael Ruggieri, great friend, composer, very talented composer, songwriter, singer, musician. If you've got a film out there, you won't go wrong with him. Let's talk about this part aspect of this entire project, which has been very disappointing to me. And that has been, the idea is simple. You have documentary films that say there are social injustices, there are political injustices, there's financial injustices, and they report on science. You don't see really too much like science injustice. There was the film, of course, that won the Oscar, was scientific, which was about global warming. But I figured Einstein being wrong, and especially with literally proof in the film, I mean, a guy stands in front of the Stanford Linear Accelerator and says, Einstein predicts that mass increases, and we don't see that. And in all simple science terminology and etiquette and philosophy, that means it's wrong. It has to be thrown out. Something has to change. So we showed lots of problems in the film that are very obvious, yet the idea that when it gets to these film festivals, they go, oh, wow, Einstein's wrong. This guy's got this great entertaining film. It's not one of those films that are scientific and bores you to death. Like a friend of mine spent literally over $1 million and he made the Cosmology Quest and about the Big Bang. And he says when he gets his friends together in Europe, he's a composer actually for film. He says if he wants his friends to go to sleep, he shows them his film. And he spent $1 million on it. And so we have this film that's greatly entertaining, that even if you're not into the science, it's got a great, great, great story, thanks to my editors putting this great story together. Where did this go wrong? What do you think is happening? I mean, I know in England we got very close. The guy told me it made it into the finals. What do you think is... it's not the film. What do you think's happening? What's your take on that?
Yeah, as I said, I don't know that I don't think it's something that we got wrong, because I, you know, being someone who's seen it and involved in a lay person, it's very entertaining and very factual, and you come away, really understanding what, you know, some of the scientists are talking about and where they refute, Einstein. So my take would be that, I think some of the people maybe on these, festival committees who are actually seeing these, if they're getting the documentary that's not about the big, social injustice or the climate change or this or that, they hear the science part of it. And I think they have a that preconceived notion that Einstein wrong, and it's almost like you had me at hello, they're stopped at that word. Well, how could this be? How could I not know about this? We've had a few conversations about that where, that intellectual person, well, if Einstein is wrong, I certainly would know about it.
And I think
that stops a lot of maybe that tracks, maybe that haven't given it that opportunity to get to the audience, to take a look at the film.
Yeah, it's really, it just hit me in this conversation. It's somewhat been depressing. And people haven't even asked me about it, because it's been a year now since I've tried to get it out. And I've sent it literally to 80 film festivals around the world. I've still got a couple hopes up. There's a film festival in Czechoslovakia. But you just said something that, really hit me. And that is, people said, you don't want the title Einstein wrong. That's too strong. And I was saying to myself, no, you do, because it brings attention to what it is. It's not going to be like, hello. One person said, why don't you make it goodbye Einstein, hello Karazani, a new scientist. I don't know. It just doesn't catch. And I'm thinking, well, I looked at it so much from, I think, as a director, as so much from the point of view of the layman. I thought, if I were in a theater and I saw these films, Einstein wrong, hey, I'm going to go see that one. I heard it's even, entertaining story. Because you got to make it's funny, because the audiences themselves, I was a judge for the International Documentary Association for their awards a couple years ago. And I had to watch all the major feature films. And after a while, I didn't want to do it anymore. I was getting so depressed. I mean, you watch these things and you just lose faith in humankind. You just don't want to have, every time you see something, it's so heavy on your conscience that you can't take it. It's like, give me something lighter. And I was thinking, well, this is going to be that. That's going to be what this film is about. And so when you were telling me, Einstein wrong has sort of been the stop, that may have been true. I was looking at it perhaps way too much from the layman, thinking that's where I'm selling it. That's where you sell tickets, instead of getting it past the guards at the door. And, we have talked about that. And that is, I was at the IDA, International Documentary Association, there in LA. And, I would tell people about my project. I stopped talking about it because I got the same reaction. Oh, Einstein's wrong. I would know about it. We'd have 10 people on that. And I said, well, so you think he's right? Oh, of course. I mean, if he was wrong, what do you know? And so I stopped talking about it because it got depressing. But that could be. Now let's talk about the dissident scientists themselves. I mean, one of the things I'm going to use you in this podcast today is you're not a scientist. You're very bright, obviously, intelligent guy. You've hung around with these people. And one of the things my editors and I were very careful in the film was not to treat these guys sort of walk a middle line. And that is, yeah, they're quirky. All scientists are quirky. I mean, Stephen Hawking is quirky. Einstein was quirky. That's where the whole prototype of the mad scientist comes from, Einstein. You want to treat them in the interesting characters that they are, but you don't want to treat them or make fun of them at the same time. I mean, being around this and the subjects and what you hear, What would you say to a person, a lay person, who would say, "Hey, Mike, I heard you were a composer on this film." For these people, all these scientists who think they're think Einstein's wrong, and I read on the internet that this scientist, and in fact, it's on the MPA. I mean, we've got a new name with the organization, but a famous author said they're a bunch of Jesus Christ trying to, you know, save the world. They're all like, she. It's literally there in Wikipedia. I mean, what right. would you tell if you're talking to an average person and you're saying, "Hey, what do you do as a composer?" "Oh, I did this film. It was a great experience. Oh, it was on Einstein wrong." And they go, "Oh, Einstein wrong? I mean, you did a soundtrack for a bunch of crazy crackpot loonies." What would you say?
I would say absolutely not. You know, in the film, you know, first of all, you know, as you mentioned, scientists across the board, you know, are very, you know, quirky, bright, intelligent people. What I've seen by this group that were in the film that I've had a chance to meet is very intelligent people who have a conversation. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned over the course of the, you know, being involved in the film throughout the whole process was, the mainstream typically is a one-sided conversation. Huh. You know, here is my piece. Here's my paper on it. Here's my come to this meeting on it. But there's right. not a two-way conversation.
Wow.
All the meetings I saw involved in the film was, here's my presentation. And one huge part being, you know, your father in the film and his experiment was, here is my presentation on it. And you've got a group of other people who actually sat there. They all have their own very strong points of view, but they listened and they took in the information and they digested it. And they said, you know, I see this, or I, you know, there was a dialogue.
Right.
That to me was,
wow.
It shows that's why, you know, this needs to happen and it needs to be heard, because there's no crackpot in that. These are very intelligent people who come from a whole walk of different, you know, professions and with interest, but see, you know, are willing to take a look at this and say, this is not correct, and here's why, and let's have a discussion on it.
Well, that is very profound. It's incredible. I think one of the things with my father in the film, it was very true. While I was filming and my father was helping me with the gravity experiment, I felt very guilty. I said, what have I gotten my father into? He's going to be looking like a crackpot. And he turns out to be, he is a brilliant scientist, but it's amazing to see. But they're always questioning themselves. My dad will always, he's the first to say, well, you know, I've got this going, but it's just a cobbled together, and I'm hoping to explain this, but there's never that arrogance, that, you know, overpowering, that one-way conversation. That was very profound. But another question I have for you is that when we have the mainstream out there, and we have these scientists out there, what do you think it's going to take to get us to go to make that leap from what you're talking about is what we call dogma. Dogma is the term for people who preach the answers, and it's a one-way conversation. You learn right. it, that's the way it is. It's very much like a religion. These are the rules, follow it. And, you know, what would you see? I mean, what would you say would be a way? I mean, obviously this film, but what do you think could help get this out into the public?
Again, I think it's the more and more of these groups of people who get together and have these conversations and show different theories. And I think it will take some more influential people who the, you know, let's face it, the public basically, you know, they're looking for somebody to lead them. Right. So if you say this, that must be right type of thing. And I think, you know, it may take a few of very influential people who all of a sudden, you know, decide to really right. look at things and say, you know what, we need to investigate this more. You know, it's going to take sort of that, I think, to sort of catch on to where maybe more of the mainstream says, yes, this is, you know, we need to blow this apart. I mean, let's face it, at one point we, you know, there was only 9 planets. Mm. So, you know, at some point, the tipping point, it's that tipping point of when people start getting more into, you know, the truth of actually taking a look at it.
Right. I think that's one possible way that can happen. You get somebody who's got some influence, and all of a sudden people are starting. It's I think it's sort of like the celebrity who takes up some disease you've never heard of, and then all of a sudden, I mean, look at Jerry Lewis. I mean, the telethon he's had for the gajillion years. I mean, he just happened to have that and the will and to get out there and make a case for it and lend his name and popularity to open that voice up. So that's interesting. So I'll be looking for you to find, since you're still in LA, I'm here now in Florida, I'll be looking for you to start, you know, networking out there with some of the big names and get them on side here. I'm sure that's going to be on top of your list of things to do in the next, in 2015.
I'm in. I'm sold.
Listen, it's been really great, Michael. The entire experience. I truly, I'm being honest. I truly hope. I mean, it's going to be hard for me because I've got investors in this film, and they're going to say, "Well, I'm going to invest in another film." It went, you know, no one's seeing it. Well, we're working on that. We have some ideas about that. But I truly, if I work and I'd like to work on another film, even in this area, you know, I've got a composer, so I appreciate it. And your talent is really quite astounding. Your ability to take directions also, which is not always easy. The theme song, the entire soundtrack. And for those who are interested, get in contact with us. We have our contact. You can just send an email to contact@dissidentscience.com. And we'll be happy to get you in touch with Michael or give you some pointers to where you can listen to more stuff. But we'll have links to Michael's work on the podcast page for this episode 3. So go there, take a look at it, listen to some of this great stuff, and give yourself a chuckle with the theme song. The only theme song to a scientific documentary that I know of, and probably at least with lyrics and a music video on top of that. So you've got to see that. So, well, thank you very much, Michael, for taking your time today. It was great talking with you.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me. And again, you know, it's always a pleasure. And any projects, give me a call. I'll always be there.
All right. You can count on that. All you do is get people to believe after no one's seen this film yet. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be one of those films that has a really bizarre story where you see it, you know, years after it was made, but it makes a splash. I still think that's very possible. So thank you and take care. Hope you're nice and warm there in sunny California. Thanks so much. This is David D. Hilster with Dissident Science. You are listening to the Dissident Science Podcast, where critical thinking meets mainstream theory head on. Be sure to check out our latest podcast at www.dissidentscience.com. Oh, come on outside, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.